morning. All right. I don't like doing this twice, but I think we have to. Good morning. All right, good. At least we don't have to do it three times. You know the routine. Most mornings that I'm here, I entice you to say something to the person next to you. And today, we're going to say something slightly different. How many of you enjoy that last song? I closed my eyes, and towards the end, I heard multiple voices. And it was just beautiful. So today, I got a compliment. Somebody told me that my clothes look really nice. And today, I'm wearing absolutely everything that I'm wearing is my wife purchased it for me. So I'm thankful for somebody with good taste. So tell the person next to you, you look beautiful today, but also tell them you sound beautiful today, because that last song I heard hearing you sing, it was just amazing. So turn to the person next to you, tell them you look beautiful and you sound beautiful today. All right. Very good. And for those of us who were just humming along, that's okay. That sounded beautiful too. And if you were singing in your heart, that sounded beautiful too. And some of us, that's the best we can do, just sing in our hearts. Had a good week? Yes? It's so good to see you, Libby. I saw Libby coming into church, and I said, who's that blonde? Oh, my goodness. And Libby, you look stunning today. And Libby didn't post on Facebook anything about her lack of sleep. So it's been a good week, Libby, and we're so glad you get to be here. Happy Memorial Day. That's kind of like a contradiction, right? Memorial Day. It's a difficult day. I long for a day where we will live in a world where there will be no more violence, where there will be no more war. And yet it is because the valor of men and women who give their lives that we can be here today. And we ought to honor that. So while Memorial Day is kind of like the kickoff of the summer, and we can see that today, many of the people we love are enjoying that starting of the summer this weekend. It's also important to know that there's people who gave their life so we could do that. And while, again, we long for a day where there will be no more wars, we still show appreciation for those who valiantly have fought so that we could be here today, enjoy the freedoms that we enjoy, and we want to remember that today. So we have deep gratitude for that. Okay, let's pick it up a little bit now. I have a set of good news and bad news. Which one do you want first? Let's start with the bad news. Bad news is, I've been a fairly good boy lately, and I've tried to really shorten sermons up a bit. Today, I may not keep that promise. So today won't be the shortest sermon ever. I hope will be not the longest ever. But I think it's actually really profound, and I'll tell you. But here's the good news. While many of us are enjoying the beginning of summer, you are here today, and you're the brave, and you're the few, and I'm grateful for you. I thought you should get a treat of summer anyways. And somebody told me this week that summer hasn't started until you have a popsicle. So I brought a few popsicles. If somebody would like to take one, there's only one rule. First of all, if you're a child, mommy and daddy have to approve. And second of all, no wrappers at the end of the service. Are we sure? Okay, can we keep those two clauses? Just your teeth. Yes, teeth. Or we'll stab it with something. But we have some popsicles here. And for those who are really healthy, we have real fruit, no sugar added bars. I wonder how many of this will be left over after the service, but we have that. And it's kind of awkward to do this during the sermon. What we can do is we can leave them out back, and as you walk out, you can take your popsicle for the go after the message. So pass that around. Grab one if you want now. If not, we'll leave them on the table out back. But I thought that even though you're here, summer has started, you should get a treat. All right. Let's get the ball rolling. I want to invite you to open your Bibles to John chapter 4. That's where we're going to be part today. There's going to be no slides. We're going to be looking at a passage in the Bible. We're not going to look at any verses outside of that passage. We're just going to go through John chapter 4. Are you there? You can look it up in your digital Bible, in your paper Bible, in whichever Bible you have, or your imaginary Bible, if that's all you've got today, that's fine. But we're going to be spending time in John chapter 4. Are you with me? Okay, one person is with me. Are you with me? All right, John chapter 4, verse 1. All right? Now, before we start, I was planning of talking about something completely different. And I was looking at a passage, and in that passage, a word caught my attention, and that word led me to another passage, which led me to a story. And it's a story that we all know extremely well, and you probably heard it 100 times. But what's caught my attention is that there is a commentary right before the story and right after the story, which I think give the story slightly different context. And that's why we're going to have to take a little time, because we have to look at the story, but I also want to do the piece before and after. And we're going to do this as quickly as we can. But here's the question. Have you ever had to hide something in your life? Are there things in your life that you felt that needed to be hidden? Yes or no? Yes? What are the sort of things that we like to hide in our lives? Surprise birthday parties, all right. That's a very nice thing to hide. Something else that we like to hide many times in our lives? Mistakes? Absolutely. Mistakes? That's the same, okay? Failures, sins, past and sometimes present. Very good. What? Hoarder? Okay, that's in a class of its own. Yes. Aiden? Promotions? Oh, emotions. That's a very good one. Do we ever hide good things? Hey, Kia, so good to see you. I saw Kia last at, I saw you last year, but I still remember that time I saw you at Wells Fargo and you lit up an entire bank. That was awesome. All right. Do we ever hide good things like success? Because maybe we think we're undeserving, or maybe we think we got something that if others knew what we had, it would probably hurt them. When I was in college, the president of the university had a really nice car, a car that I envied, but he never let it out of his garage. He didn't want anybody to know that he had bought a good car. I knew because I was a family member, and I have found out, but he had for 2 years that car garage so nobody could see it because he felt it would hurt somebody else if they knew that they had the car. And he felt that he didn't deserve the favor that he had received to get that car, and that's why he hid it. And that's the interesting thing about the things we hide. Now, when we hide things, are we happy? Can we enjoy them? When we hide bad things, does that affect us? Does that rob us of certain joy? When we hide good things, that does affect us and rob us of some joy? Could he enjoy the car? No, right? Can we enjoy that great job if we feel like we got that position undeservingly over somebody else? With that feeling, does that mess up the favor of that good thing that happened? And somehow, in order to have joy, we have to live free from the things we hide. So John, and I hope that by the end of the service, that will the message that will make sense. So let's start. John chapter 4, verse 1, and we'll see how we deal with these things that we hide. Therefore, when the Lord knew that the Pharisees had heard that Jesus made and baptized more disciples than John, though he himself did not baptize any but his disciples, he left Judea and departed again to Galilee. But he needed to go through Samaria. So before this story that we all know starts, there's three verses that are just like a little commentary of what's going on. Why is Jesus leaving leaving Judea? Why is he leaving? Why is he leaving there? Could we say that he was leaving there because of his success? It says the Pharisees find out he was baptizing more people than John, and he had to leave, right? We had pastors meeting. My cousin and I happened to work in the same conference, and at one of the pastors meeting, they always gave pastors reports of how your church is doing. And he brings his report, and he comes comes grabbing his bag and said, "Oh, my back hurts so much." And I said, "Oh, really? Yeah. Why is your back hurting so much?" He said, "Oh, from all those baptisms that I've been doing lately." And I was like, okay. "Oh, really, your back hurts? My wrist hurts so much." And he said, "Really, why?" "Because I'm for all the transfer that I signed from your church to my church." And sometimes there's this kind of like competition going on. And that's actually a completely fictitious story. My cousin and I never had that exchange. Somebody else did, but they shall remain nameless because we want to protect their characters. But there seems to be this thing going on between John, Jesus' cousin, and somehow, because of what was happening in Jesus' life, there were all these baptisms, some uncomfort rose up, and he says that he needed to leave because of his success. Maybe Jesus' success was somehow based on John's work. Doesn't the Bible say, go prepare the way? Yes, you remember that story? All right. And we know that that wasn't why. It was because, obviously, the work of the Spirit. But somehow the Spirit had worked through these men, and John had prepared the way for Jesus. And now Jesus was harvesting this great work. Verse 4, but he needed to go through Samaria. So Jesus is coming down from Judea, going to Galilee. Did he have to go to Samaria? Yes or no? It says he had to go to Samaria. But he didn't have to go to Samaria because there was another route called the Transjordan route. But sometimes we just have to do things, right? You have to go to this restaurant because it's really good, right? Or you have to try this, or you have to do something. Sometimes there are things we just have to do, not because we have to, because we don't have any other choice, but sometimes we have to do something because we know that that's what we had to do. And Jesus now had to go to Samaria. Now comes a story that many of us are extremely familiar with. So as he came to the city of Samaria, which is called a city in Samaria, which is called Sychar, near the plot of ground that Jacob gave to his son Joseph. Now Jacob's well was there, and Jesus, therefore being wearied from his journey, he sat thus by the well, tired after walking for many hours, sun beating down on his head. He's sweaty, he's tired, and it says, and it was now about the sixth hour, and a woman of Samaria came to draw water, and Jesus said to her, give me a drink. For his disciples had gone away into the city to buy food. Now, this story, which to us it's very linear, actually had all these layers of complexity and awkwardness. First of all, Jesus is now going through a route that anybody like him would have avoided by any cost. Now he enters a city, and it's noontime, and now he starts talking to a woman. Now, to get an idea of how awkward it was, in that time in history, husbands wouldn't talk to their wives in public. Now, we do that now at restaurants, right, because we're all on our phones and we don't talk to our wives even in public, but back then they did it for different reasons. They did it because you just didn't have that sort of exchange in public. And now Jesus is talking to this woman, which made his character highly questionable. One of my friends talks about the story, and he says that it's like that awkward moment in the bar when the guy starts talking to that woman sitting in the bar. Or another one of my good friends, when he preaches a sermon, he says that Jesus essentially said to that woman, how you doing? Like Joey from Friends. Now, I don't know if that was, give me a drink, was a pickup line back in the day. I have no way to prove that one day or another. But what I can guarantee you is that this was an awkward exchange, because on top of that, she wasn't only a woman, but she was a woman from the other side. Now, just for you to get somewhat of a grasp of how awkward this was, the disciples went to buy food because Jews could buy food from Samaritans because there's an exchange of money. There's no shame in that. You have money, so you can buy your services. But they could not share a vessel with them. And it was so that if they shared a vessel, if they ate from the same vessel, if they drank from the same vessel, they couldn't go back to Jerusalem to worship because they were ceremonially unclean. If they had that sort of exchange with a Samaritan, they couldn't go back to church for 3 months. Talk about awkwardness. And now Jesus tells this woman, give me something to drink. Now, we don't have any layers of awkwardness in our relationships, do we? Which side of the wall are you in? Are you Second Amendment or are you not Second Amendment? Who did you vote last election? There are certain things that make relationships awkward. And Jesus goes and talks to this woman, and he approaches her. And in this extremely awkward exchange, now she responds. So the woman of Samaria came, and Jesus had said to her, "Give me a drink," for his disciples had gone away into the city to buy food. And then the woman of Samaria said to him, "How is it that you, being a Jew, ask me for a drink, being a Samaritan? A woman, for the Jews have no dealings with Samaritans." So basically, she's telling Jesus, "Who do you think you are? Jesus, what are you doing? Jesus, don't you sense the level of awkwardness in this? Jesus, why are you talking to me in the first place?" Because there are some people to whom we just don't talk to. There are some things that we just don't talk to. And then Jesus answered to her, "If you knew the gift of God and who it is that who says to you, 'Give me a drink,' you would have asked him and he would have given you living water." Now, let's move on to the next verse because I'm trying to do this a little more condensed. The woman said to him, "Sir, you have nothing to draw water with and the well is deep. Where do you get your living water? Are you greater than our father Jacob, who gave us the well to drink from it himself, as well as his son and his livestock?" Jesus, who do you think you are? And by the way, we say Jesus, but to the woman was stranger at the well, because she had no idea who this person was. So stranger at the well, who do you think you are? Can you give me this living water? Now, when we read living water, what do we think about? What is living water? Say what? Why do you say that? That's amazing. You just rub all the suspense we're trying to build here. Yes, that's exactly right. Because many of us, when we read living water, we think it's the spiritual thing that the stranger was talking about, right? This living water, the spirit, something that drinks the soul. But she thought, most likely, exactly what you just said. What's water that's living? Water that's moving? Water that's flowing? Is flowing water better than standing water? Yes. I had my well water tested yesterday. It's disgusting. It has iron, it has phosphorus, it smells, it stinks, it stains. But flowing water, it purifies, especially if you're in a desert, when there is no sediment, there's just rocks. As this water flows, it gets purified. And now when the stranger talks to her, he says, "I can give you running, purer, more beautiful, tastier water." Have you ever tasted real spring water? It's delicious. It has this natural sweet taste to it. In Italy, I was able to drink from a spring, and it was the best water I had ever tasted. And Jesus is saying, there's something better than that water from the well that you've been drinking from. There's a water that I can offer you. It's a living water. It's a running water. It's pure water. It's better water. And she says, "Who do you think you are? Are you greater than Joseph? Are you greater, than Jacob, who gave us this water? See, this well, Jesus, stranger at the well, this well is deep. While other water sources have failed us, this well has given us the water we've always needed. And not only us, our animals, our farms, everything, because this well is deep. And while the other wells have dried up, this one has provided for us. Where are you going to get this water that you're talking about? Do you know something that Jacob didn't know about? Do you know some information that we have missed? Because this water is good, and this is the best well that we have, and this well has provided for us year after year, generation after generation. Who do you think you are, stranger at the well? Are you greater than Father Jacob, who gave us this well, this deep well, this good well, and drank from it himself, as well as his son and his livestock?" And then Jesus answered and said to her, "Whoever drinks from this water, they will thirst again. But whoever drinks of the water that I shall give them will never thirst again. But the water that I shall give him will become in him a fountain of water springing up into everlasting life." And then the woman said to him, "Sir, give me this water, that I may not thirst, nor come here to draw. Because no matter how different we are, no matter how awkward our differences make things, we all thirst the same. And even our deepest wells eventually leave us thirsty again. So maybe Jesus was talking about something more than just running water. And this woman simply says, give me this water so I won't thirst again. Give me this water so I don't have to come back here again. Why did this woman not want to come back here again? What time did Jesus approach the well? My Bible says it's 6 hours. Some Bibles that have been updated say noontime, right? Now, if you grew up back then, you would know that noontime is not a good time to go to the well. See, people had been pulling out water from that well all day. The sediment had settled. The water was extremely murky. And the only reason why she would go at noon when it's hot, when she has to carry hundreds of pounds, or maybe not hundreds, but many pounds worth of water back to her home, walk all that distance with all that weight, and the water that she's drinking has already been muddied up by all the other people pulling from that well. The only reason why she would go at noon to get that water is what? And you know this because you read the story many times. There was somebody, something she didn't want to see. She wanted to avoid. She wanted to hide certain things, and she wanted to come to the only time where she knew she would be alone, even if it meant drinking dirty water, even if it meant having to travel through the worst time of the day, even if it meant having to carry a heavy burden in the worst time of the day. So when this idea comes of another water source, she says, give me this water so I don't have to carry this burden anymore. Because even our deepest wells will leave us thirsty, will not satisfy our souls, and will not hide our shame. But sometimes in order for clear water to flow, murky water has to go. Give me this water. Let's read on a little more. So, verse 16, Jesus said to her, okay, you want this water? Let's talk about this. Go call your husband and come here with him. Because maybe if your husband is around, this conversation won't be so awkward. And then the woman answered and said, well, gee, stranger at the well, I have no husband. And Jesus said to her, you have said, well, I have no husband, for you have had five husbands, and the one whom you now have is not your husband. In that you have spoken truly. See, for clean water to flow, sometimes murky water has to be flushed out. In order for us to enjoy the happiness of life and not have to live hiding things, there are certain things that need to be flushed out. And Jesus now goes to the heart of the problem, because there are many things that murky up water. There are many things that make water stinky, staining, and dirty. For this woman, it was these relationships that had completely messed up her life to the point that she was willing to carry this burden and taste this dirty water because of all these things that had messed up. Maybe these husbands were bad to her, and maybe they had ruined her life, or maybe she was just considered damaged goods, or maybe she was searching in this man something that she couldn't search her own. But the truth is, there are a million things that murky up water. There are things that murky up your water and my water. Sometimes it's things that we are addicted to. Sometimes they are things that scars that we carry. Sometimes it's forgiveness that we haven't granted. Sometimes it's images that we look on a screen. Sometimes it's the desire to be accepted. Sometimes it's us having to prove ourselves over and over again, having to work twice as hard and not be happy. They are all this sort of things that murky up our water. And Jesus is saying, you have spoken truly. Let's get to the bottom of this problem. And now it's the woman's reaction, which are really like us. Anybody who has been a boss, anybody who has been a parent, everybody who has dealt with someone else has seen this before. And the woman said to him, "Sir, I perceive that you are a prophet. Our fathers worship on this mountain, and you Jews say that in Jerusalem is a place where we ought to worship." Do you see what she just did? Yes or no? Did that make any sense? A few days ago, I go downstairs in our kitchen, and there is a big puddle of water on our wooden floors. Water shouldn't puddle on a wooden floor. Christian and Eliana have been having summer fun in our kitchen. I am livid. I come down, and I say, "What's going on?" And Christian looks out the window, look, it's a red robin outside. Can you see it? Because sometimes when under pressure, what's the easiest response we can give? Deflect, right? Jesus, you just put your finger on a sore. So let's talk about worship. Jesus, is it Hillsong or SDA hymnal? Let's talk about this, Jesus. Jesus, are you pro-choice or pro-life? Jesus, let's talk about this. Are you on this side of the wall or on this side of the wall? Because sometimes it is so much easier to find something to disagree on than to get to the heart of the issue. Jesus, is it this mountain or this mountain? And Jesus responds, "Woman, believe me, the hour is coming. Well, you were neither use this mountain or that mountain. The hour is coming where it won't matter on which side of the wall. The hour is coming where all these things will not matter as much as you think as they matter." Our fathers, the hour is coming where you will neither on this mountain nor on Jerusalem worship the Father. You will worship what you do, because you worship what you do not know. We know what we worship, for salvation is of the Jews. But the hour is coming, and now is, where the true worshipers will worship the Father in spirit and truth. For the Father is seeking such worship to him. An hour is coming where belief and behaviors will line up. An hour is coming where action and knowledge will line up. An hour is coming, yes, this Jews knew a lot. They had a lot of head knowledge, and the Samaritans had really good acts and really good actions. But she said, the day is coming where all these things are going to line up, and those who will worship me with mind and heart, that those who will worship me in spirit and in truth. For God is spirit, and those who worship him must worship him in spirit and in truth. And then the woman said to him, because this is now the second response. The first response is, let's argue about something. And the second response is, the woman said to him, "Oh yeah, I know that the Messiah is coming, who is called Christ. And when he comes, he will tell us all things." What did she just say there? What did she just say there? Because this is what we also tell ourselves time and time again when we are faced with these difficult situations. This is what she said. "Yes, Jesus, maybe tomorrow. Yes, Jesus, maybe next year when I do my New Year's resolutions. Yes, maybe next time. Maybe the next time around this issue, the Messiah will come and we will get this figured out. Yes, maybe today we'll just agree to disagree. Maybe today this issue will remain unsettled, but maybe tomorrow, maybe mañana, we'll have to deal with this." And Jesus said to her, "Oria, I who speak to you, I am he." Many times when we are confronted with these things that stir up the muddy waters in our lives, we deflect, or we leave for tomorrow. And Jesus is saying, Don't live for tomorrow, the life you can have today. I am He. I am now. This water is yours today. A new season is bursting forth within you. But in order for that new season to start, some things, some ideas, some pain, some resentment, some addiction, some things have to die. And then this water will flow. And Jesus said to the woman, I am He. I am here. And I am now. And this living water is available to you, welling inside of you like a fountain bubbling up inside of you, flowing through you. I am He. And this is where the story kind of ends. It would seem for the woman. Because right at this pinnacle moment, the disciples show up. And right of this glorious conversation where Jesus for the first time reveals to somebody that He is the Messiah, He claims this. The conversation is crashed by those who follow Jesus the closest, His disciples. And we are left with no answers to how does this happen? How can we live free from the things we hide? How can we live without shame? What happens next? And now verse 27 says, at this point the disciples came back and they marveled that Jesus said that He was the Messiah, right? They marveled that He had shown grace to this woman who was an outsider. They marveled at this thing that they had. No, they said, what? They marveled that He was talking to a stranger. And then the woman then left the water pot, and she went her way to the city. And now she sent to the men, come and see a man who told me all things that I ever did. Could this be the Christ? Then they went out of the city, and they came to Him. Who did the woman go to see? What was she going at noon to the well in the first place? All of a sudden, she goes to the same people she was trying to avoid. And she tells them, come see this thing that just happened. And meanwhile, the disciples urged Him, saying, Rabbi, eat. But He said, I have food to eat, which you do not know of. Therefore the disciples said to one another, has anyone brought Him anything to eat while we were gone? A few months ago, I started pastoring another church, Virginia Beach Church. You guys are fairly aware of that. In that church, we have this group called the Aunties. And while I know that these disciples had Jewish DNA and Jewish culture in them, I'm sure they had some auntie DNA in them, because these aunties, all they want to ask me is, did I eat? I have gained 10 pounds since I took over Virginia Beach. And it's the only concern they ever have is, Pastor, did you have something to eat? And these disciples, as clueless as they are, their only concern is, Jesus, did you have something to eat? Jesus, did you have something to eat? Did somebody bring you food? Jesus, what's going on? So I guess there was a little bit of the aunties in these disciples. And now Jesus replies to them. He said to them, my food, it's way deeper than these things that you're thinking about, because my food is to do the will of Him who sent me and to finish His work. Do you not say there are still 4 months and then comes the harvest? Behold, I say to you, lift up your eyes and look at the fields, for they are already white for the harvest. And he who reaps receives the wages, and he who gathers fruit for eternal life, that both he who sows and he who reaps may rejoice together. For in this saying is true, one sows and another reaps. I sent you to reap that for which you have not labored. Others have labored, and you have entered into their labors. There is water that is better than the deepest well, and there is food that is better than the yummiest meal which right now you're thinking about and you're visioning in your mouth, your mind, and you're tasting it in your mouth, and in about 5 minutes I'll let you go have it. You can go at any time. I'm not your boss. You can leave. I won't be offended. I get it. I understand. We're landing this plane. He says, and in this work, some of us will reap what others have sown. You will collect the success of others. You will work and somebody else will take all the credit, but somehow, when you engage in this work for which you were placed to do here on earth, you will rejoice. I have sent you to reap that for which you have not labored. Others have labored, and you have entered into his labor. Who has labored? Who is Jesus talking about? Was he talking about John the Baptist? Was he talking about the prophets of old? Was he talking about himself? The answer is yes. But when you come to this living water, this living water shows you that there is a deeper well, that there is better food, and when you engage with it, all those things that you have hidden, because look at what happens next, and the many of the Samaritans of the city believe him because of the word of the woman who testified, he told me all that I have ever done. So when the Samaritans had come to him, they urged him to stay with him, and he stayed there for 2 days, and many more believed because of his word. And then they said to the woman, now we believe, not because of what you said, for we ourselves have heard him, and we know that he is indeed the Christ, the Savior of the world. Did you catch verse 40 and 41? And the woman said, 42, sorry. And the woman says, he has told me everything that I have ever done. Wasn't she hiding exactly from all the things that she had ever done? Weren't those things the things that were robbing her of her joy? And yet somehow, when she encounters Jesus at the well, when this living water begins to flow inside of her, she goes back to the people whom she was running from, and she goes to tell them about the things that she was hiding. And now these people believe, and now they say, we believe first because of what you told us, but now we have encountered Jesus, and now we believe that he is the Savior of the world. And this is how we begin to experience joy, because sometimes we will reap that which we didn't sow. Sometimes we will sow seeds and somebody else will reap. But when we drink this living water, and when this living water becomes a fountain inside of us, and when this living water begins to flow around us, we will experience that joy, because there's a better food, and it's the food to finish the work which he has given you to do. And when you engage that work, when you believe, a new season starts. You don't have to hide from your failure or your success. And this new water will well within you, and it will flow. So the question, I guess, for us today is, do you want this living water? Do you need a new season in your life? Because when you know the reason why you have been placed in the world, when you know the work that you have been placed in this earth to do, all those things which we hide, the failure and the success, they won't matter. And if anything, they can become the source of strength, the source that connects us to other people, the source that even makes bridges with those who we have been disconnected with. And now, when we encounter Jesus and he flushes this murky water from our lives, we can engage in the work that he gave us to do. This work, this water will flow, and it will flow, and it will flow. You guys want to get ready to close? On last week, I had a chance to go to the hospital. I visited a dear friend. He's a retired Navy man. Seen pretty awful things in his life. He saw death, horror, things that he wishes he could hide, things that he hasn't been extremely proud of necessarily. Because of all those things that he experienced and the life situations that he was in, and he was working with chemicals and things, he got cancer. He survived the cancer. But a few months later, this cancer came back. He had been in the hospital for 2 days, unconscious. And with his family, they had asked that I could go and anoint him. So we went in, we talked a little bit. And just as we were getting ready to anoint him, he began mumbling and opening his eyes. And he woke up. And he couldn't see very well, but he recognized the voices and he started talking to us. And then he just said, I cannot wait to get out of the hospital to tell people about the good things Jesus has done. I just want to go and tell people about Jesus. I just want to tell people about how good he is. And then he grabbed our hands, and it was one of those like moments which just stick with you. And he asked me, could we sing a song together? And I was like, well, this is strange because I never heard him sing before. And then he grabbed our hands. And he grabbed my hand, and I grabbed his wife's hands, and then we made a circle. And I have people shake my hand hard. He, I think, broke a couple of my metatarsals or whatever. No, I think that's a different part of the body altogether. And then, as he cramped down, he started singing. Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. I once was lost, but now I am found. Lost, but now I sing. I sang that song many times before, but never quite like that. And I'm not sure why I'm sharing the story or where does this fit in, but one thing I felt in that moment, I felt living water flowing out of him. It didn't matter the things he had hit before. It didn't matter the pain that others had caused on him. It didn't matter what had happened. It didn't matter. There was water, living water flowing from his heart. And that water just spewed over me and everybody in that room. Because when that living water takes over your life, it flows and it saturates the land all around us. So I guess the question today is, are you thirsty for that living water? Are you thirsting for that water that flushes out all the murky things in your life? Are you thirsty for that water that can set you free from those things that we try to hide, whether they're good things or bad things, whether they're undeserved success, somebody else sowed and maybe you reaped, and that's okay, that's part of it. Or maybe you're feeling frustrated and you're angry because you feel like you're only sowing and you're not reaping. It says, be free from that. When you drink this living water, you can be free from all the things you hide, your mistakes, your failures, your differences with other people. And this water begins to well within you, and it gives you joy. Because there is a water that is better than the water of that deepest well. There is a food that is better than what you're about to eat in a few minutes. And the question today is, are you thirsty for that living water? Because if that living water enters your life, it will not only quench your thirst, it will transform your life and it will flow like a fountain from you to all those around. But for that water to flow, you have to be willing to let those murky things go and engage in the work that He has put you to do here on earth. So are you thirsty for that living water?
I'm gonna have you guys. Hello. I'm gonna have you guys stand up with me to sing this last song. And while we sing this, I want you guys to think about a couple things. This weekend is a very sad weekend, and we turn it into barbecues and beach days. But it is a weekend where we're supposed to remember those who gave their lives so that we could live in a country that is free, so that we could have our religious freedoms. But there's also somebody else who died so that we could be free. And he died so that one day we could see all those people that we lost saving our lives, all those people that have passed away in our families and our loved ones. So not only remember those who we have lost, but also how holy the one is who gave his life so that we could be free.
Thank you.
nation I sing praise to the King of Kings. You are my everything, and I will adore you.
Let's pray. Our Heavenly Father, one day long ago, your Son Jesus Christ also died for our freedom, so that we could be free from all those things in our lives that have power over us, that we hide, that rob our joy. And He invites us to also serve in the company of heroes. He died so that living water could be ours, so that this water would quench our thirst, it would fill and satisfy our deepest desires, and so that this water would flow through us. But in order for this water to flow through us, in order to experience that thirst-quenching power, there are certain things that we need to be set free from. And Jesus, you didn't have any problem pointing out what those things are. And if there's one thing that I'm absolutely sure is that each and every one here, every one of us, we have one of those things in our lives. It might be different, and that's okay. But you desire that we will walk out of here today ready to drink that living water. You invite us not to engage in meaningless discussion. You invite us not to deflect or leave for tomorrow what we could have today. So I pray that whatever that thing is in our lives, feelings of not being good enough, which lead us to push ourselves far to the brink of just exhaustion, and because of that, then we do things we regret, or whether it be things that we run to numb the pain, or whether it be things that makes us feel a void that we have, addictions of any kind, relationships that have shattered, wounds that we have not allowed to heal, whatever those things are. May this living water cure and cover all that. May it flush out all that murkiness. And may we be set free to do that work for which you have placed us on this earth to do. And as we do that, may this fountain of living water flow from within us. May this food that satisfies the soul, may it nourish us and strengthen us. And may we find joy in this labor, sowing, reaping, whichever it is that we get to do. May we find the joy in our lives today. May that prayer be true to each and every person here. In Jesus' name.